This is the Media Freak Podcast. It's the latest and greatest podcast created by media people who are just a little bit freaky. We're not the big dogs, we're the ones in the media trenches who tell you how it really is. Each episode, you'll hear from us with a roundup of media news, our expert guests, and some anonymous sources about the freaky world of media. So who's on the mic? It's me, your host, Harriet from Publicis, Jack from Craft.
Giorno.
Charlie from Show Heroes.
Hello there.
But no Buki from Wavemaker this week. She's living it up somewhere else. Is she?
I don't know.
What is she doing?
I don't know.
She's probably got another podcast that she's on.
Yeah, probably. Well, anyway, Buki will be back as normal next week. But in today's episode, we discuss Netflix entering its Gen AI era, publisher licensing deals, and the latest moves with Disney. So let's get into it. Publisher news. Condé Nast and Hearst have agreed multi-year licensing deals with Amazon, allowing the tech giant to train and power its AI shopping assistant, Rufus, using content from titles like Vogue, GQ, Cosmopolitan, and Good Housekeeping. This follows earlier deals with the New York Times and appears to be a strategic move for publishers. It's essentially a new revenue stream for them at a time where ad models are arguably under pressure. So what do you think, gang? How sustainable do you think these licensing deals are if tech platforms extract more value over time?
A long-term view is pretty hard to kind of tell because no one knows what the hell's happening with this, like, beyond the next 6 months, really. But in the short term, it's a pretty good idea because, like, with ad revenues dropping, like, they need another revenue stream, and this way it's actually still going to go towards fueling their kind of quality of journalism. So, I mean, it's definitely a smart move from them, and obviously kind of fits in with what they're seeing everyone else doing.
It's a lot better than what they have been doing, really, which is, when I say they, or at least what's been happening with publishers, is they've been having their sort of revenues extracted like a rotten tooth by Google and the rest of them. But yeah, I mean, it's giving a little bit more power back to publishers, which is frankly long overdue. I think on another point, like it's unknown really how much the AI companies have already been doing this for free. I mean, I know there's a few trials going on at the moment whereby I think it was like specific books that were used, basically torrented from the darker side of the web and used to train AI. There's a few like court cases going on for that, but they've certainly been trawling. And there was did you see there's like a company who were introducing AI crawler like blockers? Did you see this?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's going to be really, really important for anyone publishing anything online who wants to retain some sort of kind of control over their IP. Because, I mean, that's the thing. So much of this has already been grabbed. And so the fact that, I mean, fair play to Amazon. It's not over short of a few quid. So frankly, they should be paying for it. But it's nice to hear that someone is, which I think probably shows you how low the bar is with this, that we're going, oh, nice one, Amazon.
Well, I think the real winners are not the publishers. The real winners, of course, once again, are the tech giants. And going back to your point, Charlie, about the power to the publishers, I think ultimately the value exchange will become uneven because the tech platforms will extract more value over time. And to your point, Jack, you obviously mentioned about, you know, quality journalism. Is that going to be the case? Because are brands actually going to protect themselves if AI platforms or models like Rufus quote editorial advice out of context? That does potentially damage the quality journalism if it's used in the wrong context. Would you agree?
I mean, that's an interesting shout about the context of it, because I was sort of looking at it and going, you know, rather than scraping like loads of reviews, which could potentially be falsified, which could potentially be, you know, just people who frankly have crap taste, like they're actually taking it from Vogue or, you know, Good Housekeeping or one of those that's like actually, you know, got people who are kind of curators in their own rights and tastemakers. So actually, like that's probably going to be a good thing for the end consumer, I think.
Yeah.
But the context is a really important point.
One of the other things I think that's quite interesting to note here is that, like, with the essentially what Amazon is trying to do by building this Rufus, right, is to keep more people within their ecosystem. And so you now search on Amazon for, I don't know, well, looking at the Vogue and GQ that we're sort of quoting here, people are like, oh, fashion trends, or I want to buy this piece of garment, then you're no longer going to Google, you're no longer searching for it. And so that sort of that search dollar is now staying entirely within Amazon. So they're recapturing. I mean, like, is search dead? Is it now just conversational AI, which is going to be driving people's, you know, I want X, then they show it to you in this environment?
The way that search is changing is ridiculous, because they've started listing Instagram in Google search listings and stuff now, haven't they? Which is like, we should probably do a separate thing about that at some point. With someone who knows a bit more about it. But, like, yeah, if they can try and steal even more away from Google, I mean,
yeah,
you know, that's they're sort of spiraling a little bit, Google. Yeah. So,
and I guess with publishers striking individual deals like this, there's the potential for us to be heading into the wild west of AI licensing, in the same way, I suppose, that CTV became even more fragmented. In other AI news, so in last week's episode, we discussed YouTube cracking down on AI-generated content. And in the CTV landscape, however, Netflix is embracing Gen AI in production. So they have officially used AI in an Argentinian sci-fi series to generate a full building collapse, basically, in this series. And it marks a major shift in premium content production. So Greg Peters, the co-CEO, I don't know who the other CEO actually is, revealed that Netflix plans to expand AI across areas like search, personalization, and interactive ads later this year. So my first question for you is, how does the use of AI change the perception of what we'd consider premium content?
Oh, that is a good question, isn't it? I mean, if it's executed well and the user has no discernible, can't see a discernible difference between that and something that isn't AI generated, then I suppose the feel is still premium. It feels kind of maybe a bit soulless. And there's a wider argument over creativity and AI's role in it. Of course there is, but they did it 10 times faster than they would have done with traditional methods. And there's obviously something to say in that, right? And I think that the, whoever it was we were quoting a minute ago, mentioned that they were saying that effectively, oh, it's we're not taking away jobs. What we're doing is we're empowering creativity rather than removing creative people. Now, obviously, you need less people to do the stuff. But it's, yeah, how does it reduce the value of it? And Jack, I mean, what's your...
I mean, I think it's going to be an interesting thing, because ultimately, for the viewer who's actually watching Netflix, if the content is good and you're able to get more of that content produced faster, that's ultimately going to make for better end experience for people who are paying, what is it, like £12.99 a month now? We'll sort of just siphon off for Netflix. Like, if it makes it better, then that's great. I think the really interesting thing, though, in that article that you sent, Harriet, was the point around interactive ads. Like, using AI to create interactive ads. Now, this it's another, like, bloody Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park moment, where it's like, you spent long enough wondering if you could. Yeah, have you wondered if you should? Because, you know, interactive ads, you've been able to interact with ads online for a long old time, but it doesn't mean anyone necessarily wants to. Whether or not, I'm worried about, like, if they're going to start having, like, forced interaction and that kind of stuff, which will just be quite annoying.
Yeah. What do you mean by that? Sorry. What do you mean by forced interaction as a result of Gen AI?
I mean, it's like Charlie sat at home. He's enjoying series two of Emily in Paris for the fifth time, and he and you know, you get to an ad break, and instead of just being able to sort of like continue, you know, JCBing popcorn in, he's got to pick up the remote and play a little game to interact with an ad before it leaves the screen. Is that's just, I know it means that, like, from an ad perspective, it's like, yes, people are going to be active in inter and like so they probably remember it. But is it going to be a positive experience? Is that what people want?
Well, I suppose if you look at it from the original question and whether it's going to change the perception of premium content, from an advertising standpoint, it would, right? Because you're developing evolving adverts that are going to be even more engaging, I suppose. And if you think about it, go on.
That's a good point, because if they do it like, what was that? Was it Bandersnatch, the Charlie Brooker Black Mirror thing? So maybe if they do it well.
Yeah, if they do it well, great. But also the whole changing perception of, sorry, Charlie, did you need to jump in? I've just talked over you again. But on the point of changing, you know, whether it changes perception of premium content, I mean, is it any different to films using CGI? I mean, it's not. Really?
No, ultimately it's not. And I think we're going to end up in a situation where we have easily accessible, super high quality, undiscernible AI generated stuff, and a whole load of it. I mean, obviously now we're in a world of a shitload of like AI slop and whatnot. But I saw an AI created ad earlier. I can't actually remember the person who did it. I'll find it. We'll put it in the show notes. But it was on LinkedIn about an IKEA box that explodes and a whole bedroom comes out of it, and it was absolutely seamless. It was perfect, and I saw the prompt behind it, which was the most impressive thing. And it was, I don't know, maybe like 150 words, but structured very nicely. But now, kind of, if you can think of something, you can make it at your fingertips, and it is, you can't tell the difference between that and real life. And I guess now we get to the point, specifically talking about ads, is that like, it's all about is about the emotion and the differential that it makes, because there's no longer an edge in doing something that can wow you, because anyone can do that, if you know, well, anyone within reason. But so yeah, like, where do we go from there, man?
I mean,
just end up with like amazing, like gamified ads that are like, you know, people could spend more time on and more money on the creativity behind it. That's what I mean. That's what would be nice if it happened. But
yeah, it's interesting how we're viewing this a lot more positively than if we were talking about this last week, especially having spoken about YouTube and the reduction of, you know, AI and, you know, the creator currency. I think we'd be a lot more negative about this story. But
well, I've got one positive that for Netflix that they can do, which I think will be quite easy, is seamlessly translate foreign shows into whatever language, not only just the audio, but actually the people's mouths as well, because that must be super easy to do. Like, well, super easy within the confines of high-tech AI, but...
Gone are the days of bad dubbing.
Although I do quite like watching like Squid Game in Korean with the subtitles.
Me
like,
too.
The Korean kind of like it's part of the whole experience.
It pop a little more, yeah.
I don't know, but do you know what? To that point around like versus what we were discussing last week within the YouTube stuff. Like this, what we're talking about here is like professional like content creators, like we're calling them content creators, right? But they're like, these are people who do this for a living, and they are like, they've been trained in it and they've made careers out of it. Whereas like with the YouTube thing, it's people trying to make quick bucks out of like, you know, creating real lowest common denominator AI content. So
yeah, if that's
they
a very good
it
point
to create better AI content, then hey, fair play to them. But I do think that this will be positive. Also, for anyone listening to this, I would recommend, I'm not going to call them a rival podcast because obviously we're streets ahead of them, but The Rest Is Entertainment, Richard Osman had a really, really interesting view on this on the, I think it was the Mushroom Killer episode from last week, where he talked about his view on it from a TV production standpoint. So well worth listening to that if you haven't already.
Very good. I didn't know where you were going with that one, but yeah, worth a listen. Okay, moving on. In other news, so last week we also discussed Meta's revenue increases, and one question that came about was whether regulatory scrutiny is likely to disrupt the tech giant. And now this week we find out that Meta is now settling an $8 billion lawsuit from 2018. So they've basically be found to overlook concerning privacy issues, including the Cambridge Analytica scandal, a blast from the past, in addition to a load of other data breaches. So the lawsuit accused Meta of failing to safeguard user data and ultimately misleading investors about privacy risks. So I'm actually going to ask you the same question again as last week. Do you think regulatory scrutiny as a result of these lawsuits is likely to disrupt Meta in the future?
I think in the future, yes. In the short term, clearly not, because they keep getting their piggy bank raided, but they've got plenty of change down the side of that particular sofa. They overpaid to not have to get Zuckerberg on the deposed, right? But it's a real shame, because, and even in this one that they've just settled, like, this could have been like a who's who of tech people having to be interviewed. It would have been Zuckerberg, Sandberg, Mark Andreessen, Peter Thiel as well.
Peter Thiel was involved, yeah.
Yeah, he's man, yeah. Like, yeah, yeah, Palantir, isn't it? Yeah, but it's a shame, because that could have been like a really spectacular trial of some serious big dogs.
Facebook have pretty much now set up camp in the find out phase of the fuck about, find out continuum, haven't they? They're just constantly finding out. But the revenues are so high, they couldn't give a monkey's, could they?
No, I mean, they're going all in on an AI, clearly. Of course they are, who isn't? But they were offering like $1 billion pay packages to top AI coders, engineers, like literally $1.25 billion over 4 years for, I think it was for one of the OpenAI engineers. So yeah, they're chucking the cash around, clearly trying to diversify their business slightly.
Well, they can breach my data if they like.
Excuse me.
Well, shall we move on that note?
No.
Also, I'm just thinking about the settlement, that's all. Not for any other reason.
Hey, let us know when they breach your data.
I shall. Well, anyway, moving on. In CTV News, in episode 13, we spoke about the partnership between Disney and Amazon that essentially allowed advertisers using Amazon's DSP to access Disney inventory. And Disney are now at it again, but this time with ITV. So, in short, Disney and ITV have agreed a content sharing deal in the UK in order to mutually promote their streaming services. So, ITVX users are able to stream Disney Plus content for free, or ad-free, sorry. And Disney Plus subscribers can enjoy a selection of ITVX shows at no extra cost. So Disney, I think, seems to be making a lot of strategic moves. What do you guys think about this story or move?
I think this is a proper like ITV masterstroke. I think it's great for a couple of reasons. I mean, it's great for people who don't have access to Disney Plus, because it's another subscription and not everyone has, you know, another 8-9 quid to chuck into a, you know, the umpteenth streaming service. So it means that you'll be able to watch things like Andor and stuff and Rivals on ITV's ITVX platform. I was thinking, well, what's the benefit of ITV going onto Disney's platform? But then when I was thinking about it, it's like, actually, loads of people probably wouldn't think to open up ITVX, because they're like Netflix, Disney, Apple, like the, you know, going around the kind of standard streaming platform. But they'll actually see the content that they may not have been exposed to otherwise. So from an exposure standpoint, it's really smart from ITV as well.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty cool. And I mean, they'll be, each of them will be selling each other's inventory as well, which is quite nice. It's sort of not just going to be held on one side, but it's a bit of an interesting shift, I suppose, from like the acquisition-driven consolidation that Disney went through, because they bought, I think, like 21st Century Fox, Hulu, Lucasfilm as well, all for like multi-billions into kind of strategic alliances. And we know at some point with the growth of so many of these services, there has to be these strategic alliances eventually. It's far too fragmented at the moment. So an interesting choice. And you do wonder with the collaboration that we've been seeing in the UK broadcasters in the very recent times, whether that's going to continue maybe with Disney branching out elsewhere.
Yeah.
There's definitely a gag in this about the strategic alliance and the Disney empire. And yeah. I can't get there right now. But bear with me. Do you know what, though? On the point
if they've
like,
created the Death Star is what they've created. There and it's going to wipe out all the potential competitors unless they follow suit with the similar strategic partnerships.
Yes, I like that.
Yeah. Unless there will be the Rebel Alliance that comes through in the form of Channel 4 and Netflix.
I mean, is that the Rebel Alliance?
Well, it could be.
That makes Reed Hastings Princess Leia? On the point around selling their ad inventory, though, I know that ITV can't sell the Disney ad inventory kind of independently as just like a line. It has to be wrapped into the kind of like, if you're buying house persons and children as your audience, it would be part of that. So they're not kind of, you know, people can't go in and be like, I just want Disney, thank you very much. So it gets mixed in.
And I know if Buki was here, her feedback or comment on this news would be like, yep, everyone else needs to jump on board. These are the types of moves that are going to help safeguard the future of subscription platforms such as these. And we do expect competitors to follow suit.
You ran that one through BookieGPT, yeah.
It was like Bookie was in the room with us. It was really weird, that.
Yeah, but she does it a bit more smoothly, you see. I'm too BBC for the for the comments. Well, anyway.
Sorry, you are very BBC.
I am. Yeah. It's a blessing and a curse. BBC hit me up. Okay, in the MarTech landscape, we'd like to talk to you about Alchemy Network. So Alchemy is an innovation consultancy that's changing the game when it comes to marketing and ad tech. Alchemy works with over 550 global brands and agencies, distilling the overwhelming world of tech into tailored time-saving sessions. Time-saving? Time-saving? Well, that's not time very siving, BBC, mate. Is it?
It was a bit time- more Australian, mate.
Time-saving sessions that just cut through the noise. They're a brilliant partner, whether you've got a brief to crack or if you just want to stay sharp on what's next in our industry. So if you're curious and you would like to learn more, reach out to hello@alchemy-network.co.uk to find out. So Charlie, just from an Alchemy standpoint, how do they work with people like Show Heroes?
Yeah, so it's really useful in that I think the more we've spoken more on this pod about how it kind of can help the agency side, but from a media owner, what it means is that we get access to teams that actually want our stuff, right? In that they canvas the agencies. We will watch your strategy for the next year and how is this going to help? And if, let's say, they need an online video contextual partner who also does a little bit of CTV, then we can be put in the room directly with them. So it cuts out a lot of, from my perspective, as on the sales side, it's like the warmest of warm leads that one could get. We find great value in it. We have sessions, or they're put on sessions every month or so. I think the benefits exist strongly on the media owner side as well as the advertiser side.
Very good, very good. Well, thank you, Charlie. That wraps up the news this week. Remember, you can respond and have your say in any of the topics and stories we discuss on the podcast. Email us. It's info.tmfpod@gmail.com. That's what, Jack?
Just hit us up on the DMs at the Instagram, I would say.
Right, that's info.tmfpod@gmail.com. So moving on to Show Hero of the Month. So, woo! Yes, woo! Yeah. Can we get some whoop whoop show hoops whoop, whoop. In here?
Show heroes.
So you have the opportunity, not you and Charlie, I'm afraid, but our listeners have the opportunity.
Charlie nominated me, did he?
I'm afraid not. I don't think you'd win it anyway. Our listeners have the opportunity to nominate the Show Hero of the Month and Ooh. Give them the spotlight they deserve, plus a bottle of bubbly or top-tier non-alcoholic alternative. You can submit your the form yourself. The form is on our show notes, or you can reach out to us on Instagram. We're very active on there.
But this is a way to show some love to the people who are... by your sides standing legion in the world of media. It's rough out there at the moment, so we need to celebrate the people who are doing a good job.
Quite right. We need the good vibes, don't we?
Absolutely.
We really do.
It's all good vibes on this podcast, as always. Slightly less without Bookie, of course, but you know.
Anyway, we're going to move on to Media Anon. We haven't done a Media Anon in ages.
It's been a while.
It has. So we're sorry to all the people that have written to us, and we haven't managed to give it some airtime. But we had a really good one this week. So I'm going to share it. So
not going to keep it a secret.
I will share it.
Okay, that's good. So, if we had to guess, we might hit. We've only got a little bit of time left.
If only we had the phone jacker voice so that it could be, you know, proper Media Anon. But so here it is. I've been listening to your podcast for a while now. You often mention lots of industry events, and I was wondering, how do people actually get invited to these things who don't actually plan? I've looked into some of them, and the ticket prices are wild. For example, Madfest that Spooky and Jack spoke about last week was over £1,000. I'm an account manager and never seem to get invited by publishers. What's the secret to getting on those lists?
Question. Because it is eye-wateringly expensive to go if you want to pay it off your own buck. I mean, the short answer is you've got to get your media owner relationships kind of in place, because that's the way that's how I would go if I was going. I would certainly wouldn't be paying off my own dollar, but I think if you can make friends with some media owners who you know will be there, like have a look at the, you know, the list of people talking, you know, and speak to those companies, then they might invite you.
speak to some media owners. We generally have a few tickets that we'll buy. They'll also, anyone who's sponsoring the event, have a look at the sponsors. They'll have a load of tickets as well. And pitch a case.
I was just going to say that from an agency standpoint, obviously there's especially if you're in a larger network agency, there's usually a lot of tickets that are bought in bulk. And if you're ambitious and you're really keen to kind of get in the door of a lot of these, you know, nominate yourself to be the kind of agency reporter. Go promise that you're going to deliver a kind of breakdown for the wider business as to what was there, and sell yourself for a ticket.
Don't sell yourself. Yeah, I mean, do whatever it takes.
You know what I mean. You know, no. Put a rationale together for the wider business, because more often than not, you know, people don't have time to go to a lot of these things. And the tickets are I won't say that are always available to more senior people, but the reality is that they tend to be. And if a lot of the senior people don't have, you know, time to go, then, you know, keep on just tapping on the shoulder.
I would say don't be shy with this stuff. Like, you're an account manager, right? This is a good kind of excuse to contact the sort of like your top brass at your agency or whatever, like the people who head up your department. Just be like, hey, I really want to go to this. I was just checking. Do you know if anyone's got any tickets? The thing, they can only say no, and if they say yes, then quid's in. But I think that's a really good way in, and I think it just, like, this whole kind of thing opens up another stream of advice around, like, account people and media owner relationships. I think people don't see almost as like, okay, well, if my role isn't to speak to media owners on a daily basis, I should never speak to them. I don't have time to. I think if you make the time to speak to them, you'll understand the world that you work in a lot better. And so you should be making the time to speak to media owners anyway, even if you're not planning or buying, because then at least you kind of understand stuff a bit better. And also, if you need an answer quicker, you can go directly to the media owner. I mean, the planners and buyers won't appreciate you doing that, but who cares? You should do that anyway.
Yeah, spot on. I agree. Like, people might not necessarily push you to do it, but you do it for yourself.
Very good. Very good. Well, thank you, Jack and Charlie, for that very wise advice. And that wraps up this week. So thanks so much for listening to the Media Freak podcast. If you liked listening to our Freak this week, remember to like, subscribe, and tell all your friends. And a big thanks to Alchemy Network, our long-term commercial partner. Email hello@alchemy-network.co.uk to find out more about them and their discovery program. Thank you and good night.